our special guest for the 5 o'clock hour, just broke down BYU football for his 2015 preview on collegefootballnews.com, cfn.scout.com. Pete Futek, how you doing?
What's going on, guys?
Living the dream, brother. Living the dream. We're just talking Cougar sports all day, every day. And we like what you wrote. We wanted to talk about it. Number one, let's ask you this question. Is the September schedule as tough as it looks, or is it a little bit overrated?
Yeah, it railroaded off for me. I remember it being nasty. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's, you know, BYU didn't take it easy. You know, that's, you know, the good and the bad of the schedule is you got your moments, you know, to make some big things happen. But as you kind of alluded to before, you're kind of right. You lose one game and season's kind of over. That's kind of the bad part about being an independent and trying to be, you know, and try to create this, you know, great national schedule. That's great, but
we'll give it to you. It's Nebraska, Boise State, UCLA, and Michigan.
Yeah, it's brutal. And like all those games on the road except for Boise State, right? Nebraska and UCLA, I mean, that's, you know, that's tough. Michigan is going to be a lot better this season. So, you know, that's the problem. If you're BYU, you lose one of those games, and there's no wiggle room the rest of the way, and there's still some nastier games coming up, too. So, and then you're off to, you know, probably Hawaii Bowl or something. So that's the problem with being the independent. If you're going to, you know, if you want to be in the mix for the playoff, though, if you go 4-0 to start the season, all of a sudden you're right there for it. So you're kind of betting on yourself if you're BYU a little bit. But that's the problem. No conference championship to play for, that's it.
I've talked to some people that think that it is a little bit overrated, but I want to get your thoughts on it. Nebraska, new head coach. I mean, how detrimental is that to the chemistry? Boise State, they might have some questions at quarterback. UCLA, questions at quarterback. Harbaugh started off his first season at Stanford 4-8. Is this really, I mean, you said it was brutal. Is it truly brutal as you analyze it and you break down personnel?
It's truly brutal because Nebraska could very easily, there's a very solid case that at the very least BYU might be playing three division winners in the first four games. You know, Michigan's probably not going to win the Big Ten East, but certainly Nebraska getting Wisconsin at home could win the Big Ten West. UCLA is a playoff bound team potentially. That's Josh Rosen's going to be their quarterback. He's a superstar freshman, and he is good. He's an upgrade over Brett Hundley. So with that defense and that athleticism and that team coming back, UCLA is nasty. And don't forget about Michigan because, you know, everyone kind of dismisses them. Okay, they need rebuilding. Well, not really. That defense last year was national title good. It got completely forgot about that. That defense was amazing last season, and they get most of the key parts back. So if they do anything remotely okay on offense, all of a sudden that team's a player again. So, but again, you know, you're right. You can, you know, if you go through each one, there's a problem. Boise State, you know, yes, they have quarterback issues and they lose Jay Ajayi, but they get everyone else, the other nine starters back on offense, and that defense is going to be even better than the one that won the Fiesta Bowl. So, again, the problem if you're BYU is you lose one of those games, and it's all right. That's kind of it for the carrot at the end of the stick for your season.
Which one of those four games do you feel is the toughest, the most difficult to get a win?
UCLA. UCLA is the best team in the Pac-12 to start the season. They were among the best last year, and they just never ever played up to their talent level on a consistent basis. But that team is just terrific. Nebraska's really good. It's not the explosive killer Nebraska team of the past, but its defense is going to be better. And even without Amir Abdullah, their offense is going to be just fine. And you know, Boise State, again, that's a team that it might be kind of thinking, okay, well, again. But you have to remember, it's still Boise State. They win 10 to 12 games every single year. Just came off a Fiesta Bowl win. They're going to win the Mountain West Championship this year. Michigan, again, with that defense, is going to be real tough, too.
Pete, and correct me if I'm wrong, am I saying this right? Futek?
Futek, you got it.
Oh, okay, man, I always worry about that. You know what I mean?
Everybody, so don't, it's never a problem. I'm used to it by now.
Pete Futek, he's a managing editor of Campus Insiders and also publisher of collegefootballnews.com, on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. You talk about key games on the schedule. I believe you brought up that Nebraska game just to start off the season. You know, Coach Riley, he's familiar with Bronco Mendenhall, his defensive scheme. Do you know what happened the last time BYU faced Coach Riley?
They probably obliterated them because they do that once in a while to teams like that. What did they do to our Oregon State?
I believe Oregon State roasted them pretty good at home. It was rough. It was versus one of the best defenses that BYU has ever fielded statistically, in particular, that probably the best defense in the Bronco Mendenhall era. But talk to me about Nebraska's offense. Who's their quarterback? Who's that offensive line? They lost their running back. Let's get into depth with Nebraska, and why is that the most important key game?
Well, because it starts everything off, and Tommy Armstrong is a very decent quarterback. I mean, he's not going to be Tom Brady and light everybody up, but you're not going to see Nebraska turn into Oregon State right off the bat. You're not going to see them wing the ball all over the yard. They're still going to run the ball. They're still going to pound it. It's the defense that's really kind of the key here, and for BYU, what's going to be the real fun part about this is, all right, the injured stars are supposedly going to be back and all set to go. I mean, Taysom Hill, is he back to normal again? Jamal Williams is going to be back to normal again? And, everything coming back with the defense that struggled so much last year, can they be involved in shootouts week in and week out? And, like you said, though, Nebraska is still kind of building back up with the new coaching staff and with a bunch of different new players and key parts, but the D should be fine, and that offense is going to be just good enough. So Nebraska is going to be a tough one to start out the season with, and, you don't want to lose that, especially with the schedule you got coming up after.
Pete, you said that in your write-up on BYU, the talent level is hitting a hard ceiling because BYU isn't in a conference. In your mind, what about being in a conference would improve BYU's recruiting?
Well, the problem is that you just have nothing to shoot for. I mean, BYU has the built-in ability because of the church side of things, obviously, that you have that kind of built-in recruiting base of certain players. And it's the nice part about BYU also is you end up having a bunch of 25-year-olds on your team because you have the church missions and everything. But the problem then becomes if you're looking for where you're going to play, and you're not necessarily into the church all that much, and then maybe is BYU going to be the place for you as opposed to, say, if your choice is between BYU and Utah State. Well, if you go to Utah or Utah State, you're in a conference, you're on, in the Pac-12 world. Utah State obviously is in Mountain West, and you're shooting for, potentially a Mountain West title. And BYU, all right, so, you get to play a bunch of big games and you get to be at BYU if that's the school you really want to go to. But if it's about football, it's kind of hard to sell the idea of, all right, well, either, if you don't win, you're pretty much pigeonholed into one of these two bowls.
Hey, Pete, I'm a sports writer, and one of the things I really respect that you do is write humor. I think that's one of the hardest things to do, and your cavalcade of whimsy is always one of my favorites to pick up. How do you attack that thing, knowing that you're trying to be funny as opposed to unintentionally being funny
like most of
a sports writer?
Well, first of all, the realization that I'm just not funny at all. So if I can amuse myself, then that's all that really matters to me. So I have to get into a definite sort of place where I don't sleep for maybe 3 days and get very punchy and kind of angry at the world, and then all of a sudden then the venom starts to come out a little bit more there.
Is this the side of Pete that's like very pessimistic and he's just kind of sarcastic?
That's all me. There's nothing else. There is not a genuine bone in my body when it comes to that kind of stuff. I am 100% sarcastic. I mean, the reality is, and I kind of took this attitude from the start when it comes to this, I mean, we're not covering, a war or anything like this here. It's college football. It's supposed to be fun. And part of the fun about that is that sports fans tend to take sports way too seriously. And so sometimes it's just easy targets to kind of, pick at certain fan bases when you just know that they're going to overreact a certain way.
Well, you fans do that a lot.
Well, my question is this, Pete. If you were to write an article to poke and pick at BYU fans, what would you do in order to create some sort of a catalyst to get them to respond?
Yeah, not joking here, to actually, set the dial to a little bit serious. The problem with, BYU is you have to be very, very careful, obviously, because you don't want to offend, because it's, because of the it is sort of a sensitive thing. You don't obviously want to – you know, it's one thing to, you know, poke fun at a fan base because they have a goofy hand sign or some sort of weird chant. It's another when you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to make something fun out of a place like a BYU, where obviously the church is so important, and there are so many, you know, tenets of that are so, you know, you want to be respectful to all sides of things, including, you know, things that the rest of the world might not see the right in a different way, be it caffeine, be it dating, be it whatever it is. And so it's a little bit harder to do that. So you, and with someone like BYU, you have to keep it completely and totally on the field and really make it kind of more about, you know, the fact that the players are, you know, 44 years old and, you know, have five kids or, you know, stuff like that, that they're just, you know, overaged, or really kind of keep it more like that as opposed to, you know, anything else. Cause that's a little bit of a tougher one.
Pete, San Diego State fans in basketball are wont to wear missionary garb with name tags and bike helmets, so I think anything's fair game anymore.
Yes. I'm sure BYU fans are used to just about everything at this point.
Yeah, well, we are held tyranny by under the impressive forces of political correctness, right?
Of course, at all times. And even more so now, you know, and that's the weird part about, right, especially, you know, right in, you know, when I started doing this, like 1997, it really is a whole different ballgame in terms of, you know, certain things that just, especially with the social media world, you just really have to be careful of what you say at certain times, because anything you write will offend everybody. So as long as you're offending and yet you're being goofy about it and you realize that just how absurd it is, that's one thing. But you just have to always kind of make a watchful eye that, you know, that there's a lot that you don't want to offend and really hurt somebody's feelings, obviously.
If BYU loses a few games, you know, say they come out of that brutal schedule, as you coined it, 2-2, how do you keep the team motivated, right? In your opinion, is there any way to keep them motivated? I mean, the Vegas Bowl, if you get to that bowl, I think you got to win at least 9 or 10 games in order to get to that bowl game, in order to substitute yourself in for a Mountain West Conference team. But if you only win 6-7 games, you're definitely going to that Hawaii Bowl. Is that the motivation behind it? You get to go to the
Bowl?
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. And again, the motivation behind that, to kind of, you know, to touch upon what we were just talking about, you know, to kind of make a, you know, kind of a half joke about this, is like, you know, where's the motivation in that if you're BYU? Because if you're going to Vegas, you can't really do the fun stuff that Vegas has if you're BYU.
You have clean, family-oriented shows, Pete.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to go see Britney. You know, you're not going to sit there in the casinos. And if you're going to Hawaii, you can't really do the real. If you're a college kids, you can't really do the fun stuff in Hawaii that you would normally do. So you're right. I mean, it's just not, I mean, okay, great. All we got to do is win 6. I mean, at that point, it gets into, okay, we want to win games because we want to just win games. And, you know, we're not here to play football. We're here for school and church and all that. But it's, you're right. It's kind of hard. If they lose those first two games, which they could very easily do, and you're starting out the season 0-2, and it's, you know, not even like mid-September, and you're saying we have to now play the spoiler role. What's fun is that? And that's kind of the whole point of my article, is that at least if you're in a conference, you can at least have that, okay, we're shooting for a Mountain West title, or we're shooting for, you know, something different. And that's, you know, that's kind of the hard part about if you're BYU. So, but that's, you know, that is a glass is half empty sort of thing. On the flip side, you know, if you're really trying to think positive and you think that everyone's healthy and you think you might have the right team at the right time, you're right. Nebraska is rebuilding a bit. Boise State still has to figure out its backfield. And, you know, UCLA, you know, certainly was flaky last year. And, you know, Michigan still needs an offense. So you're on the flip side, if you're saying, okay, you know what, if we have our stuff together and everything's the right way, if we're, you know, forget it going 2-2, what if we're 4-0 at the end of September? All of a sudden, the national, you know, storyline becomes, wait a minute here, look at BYU. This is a team that, and you look at the rest of their schedule. I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but I think Missouri is their one big, you know, nasty game the rest of the way. Everything else, I think you're talking like the San Jose States of the world. You got a lot of winnable games after that first four.
You said a couple things that I want to get your opinion on. Mike Leach, I think last week, was on a radio station and said BYU is a tough first game of the season because he thinks because of their maturity, because of returned missionaries, that they have a competitive advantage. They're in mid-season form in those first three games when everybody else is trying to find their identity. And by the third game, they're playing, right? Do you agree with that? Do you think that BYU has some sort of a competitive advantage, especially in those first three games, because of their maturity? Tell me why.
Absolutely, and that's kind of what you said before about the political correctness side of things. I mean, because it's kind of a hard thing to discuss without coming across as snarky or like you're demeaning them in any sort of way. But you're absolutely right because
before you get into this, Pete, let me ask you another question that you can ask or you can answer. Do you know of any returned missionaries? Are you friends with any returned missionaries that played a collegiate sport?
That played a collegiate sport? No. I do have friends in the troop, but none of who had any sort of athletic talent whatsoever to be doing UFO like that. But to your point, though, the difference being is that the hard part for a college coach, 18 to 22 year old, people are generally melonheads. I mean, they're kids. They're into video games and they're into going after girls and pizza and all. And that's generally you don't have a maturity level when it comes to most college kids, because that's kind of what you're supposed to do when you go to college, is be, kind of goofy and stuff. And it's kind of hard to have that discipline. It's a lot easier if you've got a 25-year-old guy who might be married, might have might have a little bit more sense of responsibility in that sort of way, maybe a little bit, a different sort of, personality type. And that's kind of what BYU gets. And then there is that maturity factor. It's the hardest part about recruiting, is that when you're recruiting like a 16 or 17-year-old kid, you have no idea necessarily what that body is going to turn into when he becomes, 18, 19, 20. So that's why a lot of schools like the JUCO route, because you know what you're getting in terms of the JUCO player, because the body is generally mature. And obviously there's a massive difference between an 18-year-old and a 24-year-old body. So in that respect, that's why, and it's a competitive advantage for BYU, because look at the NFL draft over the last few years. It's not like BYU is sending a ton of players off to the pros, but they're also able to compete a little bit because they have that advantage, even if they don't have that talent level.
If it's such a competitive advantage, why don't more college football coaches, try to convince Mormon players at their respective schools to go on missions and come back as 25-year-old?
Or forget Mormon players. What about the idea of just guys in general? I've kind of always wondered that too.
Missions?
Not even missions. Just don't go to school until you're 22 years old. Don't go to, don't enroll in college, for a few, go, work it for a while doing something else and build up, and all of a sudden you have a, whole group of, just grown-up men playing for you. So you're right.
Have you ever heard of any college coaches saying, this is a competitive advantage, and we're going to actively tell our LDS players, go serve a mission because you're going to come back bigger, faster, and stronger?
Yeah, because because the problem with that also is the other side is that maybe you kind of lose that edge as a football player. BYU obviously has the system in place where they know how to handle it. They know how to do it. It's built in to your system where you just know that, every year you're going to have a big chunk of your players who are going to be off on missions for a couple years, and then you have to kind of get them back in the flow a little bit. But hopefully when they're on missions, hopefully they're still working out and hopefully still, doing the things you need to do. But
rarely
you got that down.
Yeah, they rarely. I mean, I served a mission. I played at BYU. It's tough, man. It's tough to find, 30 minutes in the day to actually work out. I came back pretty much skinny fat, as I like to call it. I had a nice round belly, but I was very, just not explosive at all. Very skinny everywhere else. I don't know. I mean, we debate this a lot because I think if you really want to poke at the BYU fans and get them angry, I'll give you an idea for that article. Just start saying that it is totally a competitive advantage and that BYU has 25-year-old men on their football team, right?
I would see. I mean, again, you obviously would know this on a different side than I would, but I would think, again, as much as it would be the physical side, it would be more the mental side. It would be more, in college football, it's the thing that pro fans just don't know about when it comes to college football is that, you just don't have the practice time that the pro guys have. You have just a few practices. You got to deal with school. You got to deal with life. You got to deal with everything else. And the more mature player, maybe not even just older player, but the guy who's just, you know, been around the block a little bit more and had more life experiences is probably going to be just a little more focused than a scatterbrained 19-year-old that, you know, whatever state. So I think, the physical side, I don't think it hurts. But I think, again, it's the mental aspect that all everything that goes into it. You probably have a far more focused player at BYU than you have a lot of other places.
Last question for you, Pete. There are two mature players, both seniors, that served missions, phenomenal football players, Taysom Hill and Bronz Kafusi.
Yep.
What do you think about their NFL prospects? You mentioned that not many football players out of BYU have transitioned to the NFL recently as far as draft picks are concerned, but Taysom Hill and Bronz Kafusi, do you project them to have standout seasons and be draft picks?
Standout seasons, absolutely. NFL Kafusi, but yes, because he's versatile. You can do a lot of different things with him, obviously, up front. Is probably not scheme specific, so you can probably use him in a variety of ways and find a spot for him in a rotation. For Hill, that's a harder one. It's the hard thing to kind of get across is that, you know, why isn't this college quarterback NFL worthy? It's really hard to become an NFL quarterback. It just, you know, forgetting just, you know, even just a, forgetting a starter. I mean, just even, you know, getting a clipboard. You know, there's always the joke, well, you know, look at this guy who's, you know, managed to get in the league and hang around for 10 years. But even that's kind of difficult. I mean, it's such a different sort of skill set than you have to learn in college. And, you know, Hill's got a lot of skills. He's a great runner. He's got to improve as a passer. He probably isn't the most polished NFL caliber passer. But Kafusi, yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to have an NFL future.
Just to piggyback off of that question, just because I started to think about it, how in the world was Jake Locker a first-round draft pick when he was,
I was always against him. Yep, that was never
me. About being a polished passer. I mean, just, you know, and that's who I compare, you know, Taysom Hill to, as far as build and athleticism is concerned, his running ability. In fact, Taysom's probably going to be more explosive and faster than Locker, but I'd say he's more of a polished passer than Jake Locker was, and he was a first-round draft pick.
It's in my world, the one thing that's the hard, above everything else, when you're looking at a college quarterback going to the NFL, can he throw accurately? And it sounds like a dumb thing, but a lot of guys just don't have that. You know, you look at who are the superstar NFL quarterbacks? You know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. You're talking about guys who, you know, it doesn't matter. You can put a 40-mile-an-hour wind left or right, and they'll still throw the ball through a tire from 30 yards out. I mean, just certain guys just are able to do that. And the difference between NFL and college passing, NFL, you were always throwing to a covered receiver. In college, you're almost always throwing to an open receiver, which is why, you know, a guy like Tim Tebow could rock at college because he was always throwing to open guys. And it's why in the NFL he rocked when there were, like, you know, 2 minutes to go and the teams were in prevent defense, but he couldn't throw, you know, to save his life during the other 58 minutes. So it's just a completely different skill set. It's so hard for these guys to adjust.
Pete, Futech, I want to congratulate you. I think you were able to make BYU fans laugh, maybe get a little bit angry, but then you finished off with educating them, and I think they're happy with this interview. We appreciate you coming on with us. We look forward to doing it again, brother.
As long as I can spend another few minutes without making the world a little dumber, I'm happy with all of them.
So you succeeded today. You've enlightened all of us, Pete.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, thanks, Pete. Pete Futech, managing editor of Campus Insiders and publisher of collegefootballnews.com.